Thank you for joining me on another episode of She Leads Now podcast, where we help career and entrepreneurial women gain the tools to develop a success mindset, create winning strategies, build collaborative relationships, and take bold action towards creating impact and fulfillment in their lives and careers. I'm your host, Sabine Gideon, and I'm on a mission to awaken and activate women and emerging leaders so they can tap into their innate leadership ability, elevate their influence, and create the impact they were destined to make. If you're ready to uplevel your confidence, courage, and influence, you've come to the right place. Join me weekly for insights, strategies, and resources to help you grow, develop, and embody the leader you were meant to be, so that you can make the impact you know you are called to make and establish the legacy you've always dreamed. The world eagerly awaits the emergence of your brilliance, impact, and influence. So with that, let's dive into this week's episode. Hello, hello, and happy Wednesday, everyone. So excited to have you joining us here for the Lead Hership in Action live series. And so I have with me another amazing guest, Ms. Hema Crockett. And we are going to have a wonderful and inspiring conversation. If you are completely new to me, I am your host of She Leads Now, Sabine Gideon. So I want to get into the meat of this because it is pretty juicy. So with that, I'm going to introduce my guest and then I'll have her tell a little bit about who she is. So my guest, Hema Crockett, is an entrepreneur, author, and avid traveler who believes that life is too short not to do what you love and follow your dreams. After spending nearly 20 years as an HR executive working in the private sector, as well as for the government, she decided it was time to start living life differently. She is the co-founder of Gig Talent, a modern talent collective connecting vetted, high-caliber, independent HR consultants and leadership coaches with organizations seeking a competitive edge. She's also a published author. She does all the things. And so I am so excited to welcome you to the show, Hema.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm excited for our conversation today.
Same here, same here. So before we get into the meat of what leadership in action looks like, I would love for you to share briefly your career journey and some of the catalysts of change for you, if you will, as you've navigated, you know, going from corporate to government and to now being a full-time entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think for me, it was an interesting journey. It took me all around the world and back again. But really where it started was I call myself a recovering HR executive. And so I was in the public and private sector for probably about 18 years, doing different roles within HR. And throughout that time, just realized the impact that we as individuals can have. And about 5 years ago, just decided I wanted to live life differently, quite frankly. You know, I had this experience about 10 years ago where I moved internationally, just saw a different side of life. Life calmed down. I was able to travel. And when I came back to the U.S., I definitely didn't want to live in that same space that I was living prior. It didn't take long for me to go right back to working 80 hours a week. And fast forward, I decided to take my own advice around life being too short to not do what you love. And that's when I decided to make the leap and become an entrepreneur. And so myself and my co-founder, we founded Gig Talent. And for us, it's really the culmination of our HR careers, us being HR consultants at some point throughout that trajectory. And really being able to bring kind of an elevation, if you will, to this profession of HR consulting and leadership coaching, because it is so necessary, especially in today's world. And just really, you know, love being able to help not only organizations, but individuals who are on their own journey as well.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And so I am fortunate enough to be one of the consultants that is part of Gig Talent, doing what I love and sharing my gift with others. So, you know, thank you for stepping away or listening to that internal tug there to be who and do what it is that, you know, is valuable to you so that, you know, individuals like me could have the opportunity to do the same. So thank you for that. So, you know, we talked initially, I want to say this was back November, so about a year ago, last year. And the focus was really around, you know, what is changing? How has HR been able to ride the storm, which was a very long extended storm the pandemic that I think some of them are still.
Yeah, I think we're still in the middle of some of it.
Yeah. And so you provided some really great insights around how organizations were reimagining their workforce in terms of not only just, hey, we need to build in headcount, but how we can partner with organizations such as Gig Talent to supplement some of the work and bringing in talent. So a year later, what have you seen? What has changed? What has shifted in terms of how organizations are actually staffing their organizations to do the work?
Yeah, I think that organizations are much more open today than even from a year ago to bring in external consultants. I think we'll always have this group that may be a little nervous or a little scared, right? HR leaders who may be thinking, oh gosh, I don't want a consultant to come in and take my job. And at the end of the day, HR consultants, at least the ones that we work with as part of our Gig Talent Collective, are not interested in that. And I think what we're seeing is because of the I would say, you know, kind of ebb and flow of talent that we've seen, where you have organizations who have to do layoffs and then they rehire and then they do layoffs and then they rehire. I think what we're finally seeing is people thinking differently about how they handle staffing and how they handle talent. And so it's really this idea that we're not trying to say get rid of your W-2 headcount. It's how can we as HR consultants and leadership coaches come in to help you and supplement? And I think people are starting to catch on that it's much better from a fixed cost perspective, because there isn't a fixed cost associated with it. It's much better in terms of the talent that you're getting. These are folks like yourself who are so talented at your specific niche, your specific area, that you can come in and hit the ground running much faster than the time that it would take to source talent, to interview, to bring somebody on board, to onboard, to do all of those things. You can get up and running much quicker. And I think what we're seeing are truly HR leaders, CEOs, CFOs who are starting to say, that's the way to go. This person can come in, they can do a great job. And then when we don't need them, they can go. And just like yourself, our consultants aren't looking for that full-time gig. So it works perfectly.
Yeah.
Right. For your skill set. So it's great to see that we're really starting to see that. And I think we're starting to bring AI into that conversation. So it's really this team of the future where it has traditional W-2, it has 1099 consultants, and then it also has AI coming in order to help supplement the other two.
Yeah. Yeah. That was I was recently at LinkedIn's Talent Connect in New York, and that obviously every organization yeah. that was a big, big, big topic. One of the things that I shared during the session was around, and I shared this when we talked too, you know, if you look at the workforce demographics, they're changing drastically. So right now with the five generations in the workforce, we have boomers who are about 20%. Between millennials and Gen X, we're looking at about a good 70 or so percent. And then we have Gen Z, who is currently 5%. They're 5% of the workforce. But we're also seeing a trend in which almost 50% of them are opting not to go into traditional W-2 work environments. And so the challenge that I brought up to the leaders who were in the room were, you know, you have 20% of your boomers who are expected to retire. Well, they're 20% in the workforce, but the majority of them are expected to retire by 2030, right? And, you know, I had to reiterate, 2030 is not that far away.
It's like not far.
Six years. That's it. Not that everybody's going to walk out the door January 1st, but still, 6 years is not a long time. And then you have a workforce who is eligible, but they're opting not to come in. And so we don't want organizations to wait 6 years from right. now when they are and some industries are already experiencing serious talent shortages. So how can they start to look at their workforce development, their workforce strategies different? And one of the things that I shared was a couple of strategies that have been implemented. One is called the boomerang strategy. So for the organizations who gave early packages to their boomers back at the early or the height of the pandemic. They are bringing them back mm-hmm. in as consultants, as individuals to train, to mentor Gen Z or younger staff members. And then they're also looking at, you know, organizations like Gig Talent and all these other supplemental organizations. One of the things that I also shared was, you know, knowing this, if you know that you have a high population of boomers, especially in some industries like manufacturing, construction, some of the financial services too, how are you preparing now, right? Like when you know in 2 years, you might lose 10 or 15% of your workforce, what can you start to do now in creating programs to engage your boomers as well as your Gen Z? And so it was an interesting conversation mm-hmm. around what organizations are doing and how they're thinking different. I give a lot of credit to the HR individuals who are there, professionals, because, you know, this is, if you think about just 5-10 years ago, the way HR operated, this is them upskilling at like 100 speed and learning how to do their jobs different, learning how to support the organization, the business goals, as well as the employees different. So it's not an easy place to be right now. So I commend those who are, you know, putting in the effort to figure out what does the workforce of the future look like.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's also, there have been so many HR leaders who have been saying this for years, who have been saying, we need to look at succession planning. We need to take a look at who will retire in the next 1, 3, 5, 10 years. And finally, we are having CEOs and leadership teams actually listen to what they are saying and to actually put into action some of these plans and strategies. So it's nice to see that HR leaders are finally being heard and their advice heeded in all of this as well.
So I'll share a little bit more in terms of the conversation that we had during Talent Connect. And Hema brought this up with regards to AI and technology and how that is going to play into, you know, the workforce of the future. And so, as we know, a lot of organizations are trying to figure out, what does that mean for their business? What does that mean for their workforce? And surprisingly enough, or maybe not surprisingly, I still hear that a lot of CEOs and leaders are very much focused on figuring out how to incorporate AI in the day-to-day to make the jobs of their employees easier versus using it as a tool in which they are eliminating the human element of the day-to-day. Because as we know, you know, people make things move, and technology is supposed to be here to support and to serve us. So the way that I see it, there are parts of the HR function in which I believe is going to tremendously benefit. So I spent the first 10 years of my career in talent acquisition, talent development, talent management, but a lot of time in recruiting. And so for those who are recruiters, we know that there are a lot of aspects of the day-to-day role that is that can be simplified, or I should say automated. So the reach outs, the original reach outs to candidates, follow-ups, scheduling interviews, and getting information. So there are parts of the role itself that during the time that I was there, and certainly, you know, for people who are serving in that capacity now, it was very manual and at times time consuming and took you away from time that you had to actually interview candidates, to get clarity with the hiring managers. So leveraging tools like AI to, you know, create prompts that sound human, of course, and engaging with candidates, you know, throughout the process, I think that that would be a huge time saver for recruiters, and it helps eliminate some of this ghosting that we've seen in this last couple of years of recruiters being so overwhelmed that they are not responding to candidates. And so it helps to nurture that. The other thing during the Talent Connect, it was shared that they have improved some of the functions, some of the recruiting. So if you're a recruiter, or even if you have the recruiting premium version, you know, where we used to do like these long Boolean searches. Now you can go in just like if you would go into ChatGPT, you can enter in a prompt. And whereas sometimes the Boolean searches would eliminate viable candidates because certain keywords weren't in their resumes, now when you put it out there, you get a broader and more specific and direct list of potential candidates. So there are certainly many, many different ways in which AI, I believe, can help simplify the workflow for HR professionals. And we can even dig deep into what does that look like for performance reviews and evaluations. How can you leverage it to ensure that, you know, instead of having this whole like open enrollment type situation every year where, you know, it's built into the process where employees are being prompted, maybe not just once a year or twice a year or once a quarter, but on a regular basis to go in and enter in their information. So those are just a couple of things that I've seen that have been rolled out that I think are going to be game changers. So thank you for that question. And Hema is back. Yes. Yay. Yeah.
Apparently they didn't talk to us today about the fact that the internet was going to keep going in and out. They're all working good on it.
All good. You literally made the point around, you know, while technology is great, it cannot replace humans.
Nope. We'd always need people.
Yes, absolutely. So I was just answering a question for one of the LinkedIn users who had asked, you know, how AI, like the role of AI in HR from our perspective. And so I was sharing how it's helped simplified or it will help simplify a lot of the recruiting workflow and process. And then even some of the like, I guess, consistent processes that happen every year in workforce. So like your performance reviews and evaluation, what that looks like. I'm curious, is there anything that you've seen or that you've heard coming down the pike in terms of supporting HR?
Yeah, I think we'll also eventually see it really make an appearance as it relates to things like compliance, employee handbook, certain policies. And I also think around HR communications, right? How do we get a clear and consistent voice? And I think that'll be just another area. I definitely don't think it's going to take away the human aspect, because I think HR is so foundational as it relates to understanding the gray, the emotional aspect, looking at both sides of a situation. But I see where it can come into play on things such as compliance and those types of areas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So shifting gears here a little, because we were geeking out on this a little.
Totally.
You were the first person to introduce me to this notion of, or actually put a word to, democratized leadership, in that everyone has this responsibility or this accountability, if you will, in their understanding that they too are leading in some capacity, whether it's leading themselves, leading a project, leading a process. And so I'd love for you to break down democratized leadership, because that's another concept that was shared several times during the LinkedIn Talent Connect. So I love the fact that it's gaining exposure, and people are starting to consider how do we shift the narrative around corporate culture so that everyone believes, knows, and operates from the standpoint of being a leader.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, this idea of democratizing leadership really means let's not simply focus on those who are managing people or those who we think are high potential, right? We see all of those programs nominate into the high potential leadership programs or the next leader programs, anything like that. This is the understanding that we as a community within our organizations all need to show up as leaders, regardless of our level, title, role, or rank in that organization. And so how can we make leadership development much more accessible and inclusive for all employees, which in turn will definitely have an ROI on our business outcomes? So that's really where it comes from. And I think looking at it broader than just our organizations, if we did that within our organizations, think of the impact it would have on the broader society, right? And really creating almost a sustainable society where we each are responsible for leadership, our own, for helping others, and we're almost passing that forward in different ways.
Yeah, I love that. And it aligns very much with my philosophy that, you know, we are all leaders, right? Regardless of what your role, title, function is, that it is actually part of your identity. And, you know, one of the things that I put a post on this about this a couple weeks ago, you know, it's so easy to look at someone and say, that's not being a leader. This is not being a leader. And I think over time, and I don't know when it began, but I feel like over time, we've gotten to a place where we've put people in positions of authority on these pedestals and idolize them and, you know, determine at some point that this is what leadership is. Yet looking at ourselves every day in the mirror and not seeing a leader, not seeing someone who's capable of influencing or having authority or impacting change. And so I'm glad that we're in the same vein around it's time for us to change that narrative on what leadership is, what it looks like, and really focus on what are the behaviors that are going to move us forward? What are the behaviors that help us as a species evolve so that as you know, as we continue to grow, as we continue to build these organizations, that they are reflective of our human nature, our natural human nature. And during the research for my book, because you had brought this up, I found the Brandon Hall Group. And so they've been tracking organizations that have implemented a culture of democratized leadership where everyone has accountability, everyone has ownership, and they're seeing improvements up to 80% in terms of performance, in terms of engagement. And so I think that that's huge. Now, how to implement that, right, in an organization that is traditional in its way of operating might be a little bit more challenging. But have you seen any organizations or partnered with any organizations who have successfully implemented and been able to, you know, see results?
I think it's too early to say what the long-term impacts are of that and what those results look like. I know of organizations who are doing it currently, who have launched different programs for all of their employees for leadership development as of this year. So I think we're still in the early stages of what it looks like, to be honest, but we see it throughout other types of organizations, right? I mean, our military, if you think about when somebody goes into the military, they're automatically viewed as a leader. They get responsibility pretty early on for not only how do I manage myself, but whether I have others that report to me or not, how do I carry myself as a leader and help others on their leadership journey? And I think that if we see it in all of these other areas and other types of organizations, and we've seen the results there, that it's only a matter of time before we start to see really same or similar results within our organizations. What I am starting to see a little bit more of is this idea that, and you touched on this briefly with Gen Z and kind of opting out, right, of the traditional workforce. The ones that haven't opted out of the traditional workforce are speaking up within their organizations and are asking for these types of programs. And so I think the more that we tackle it from both sides, the better the results will actually be.
Yeah. And we were talking about this earlier, too, with regards to, you know, how soon is too soon to start instilling or developing leadership skills within youth. And as I was doing research for the book, they were like, you know, if you think about it from a psychological or development perspective, we start to demonstrate our leadership capabilities when we're young, right? We start to assert them when we're young. And depending on the messaging or depending on the feedback that we get either from our parents, our teachers, our peers, then that actually helps us decide, okay, this is too much. This is not enough. This is working. This is not working. And then we get to a space where we like that becomes that becomes solid for us. Like whatever worked or whatever didn't work when we were kids is what we hold on to. And then we get to a place in our adulthood where we're challenged again to go within and identify, okay, who am I as a leader? Who am I, period? But really, who am I and where are my strengths as a leader? So I'm curious, I know you have thoughts around like how soon and what programming should look like to help support the development before they get into a management role.
Yeah, I think we see it already starting on the playground, right? We see who, quote unquote, steps up as a leader. We see the behaviors. We see who people are attracted to and want to follow. That doesn't mean that those traits that they possess are necessarily the best, right? We just start to see these things happening already in our schools. And I think from an early age, there's this misconception of what the word leader actually means. And I think that's where it starts, that we start to think about that it's a hierarchy and that there's one person, and that one person has command and control, if you will, over everybody else. But we never take the time to sit down until we're forced to, in many cases, within our organizations, to think about our leadership. But if we started in middle school, if we really started talking about what is leadership, what does it look like, what does it mean to be a leader, and then carry that through high school, then once you graduate high school, whether you go to college or whether you enter the workforce, you have this solid foundation of what it means to be a leader. Who am I as a leader? And kind of establishing what are those traits. And sure, they're going to morph and shift as you progress in your career, depending on which organizations you go to. But if we already come in with kind of this foundation of this is who I am as a leader, we're already way ahead of where many organizations are today, because those entering the workforce for the first time are trying to figure out what does that mean? And they're looking for mentors and they're looking for coaches and they're looking for guidance. And sometimes they're not looking in the right places. So that's how we continue to perpetuate, I think, some of the negative stereotypes of being a leader. And that's how we continue some of the command and control types of leadership that we tend to see as well. So if we start early, I think we have a really solid way of figuring out who am I? And some of that introspective work just becomes second nature to us as we continue to grow and develop.
Yeah, I totally love that. And I think the other thing that I would add to that too is, you know, we have to redefine how we introduce leadership, right? So I'm just thinking back in school, right? So you had like the great, quote unquote, the great leaders, right? And, you know, it's about our forefathers, or
right?
Columbus. And like, you know, the image of leadership and the narrative of what it meant to be a leader, even that in itself needs to change, right?
Yeah, the definition has to change.
Yeah, the models that we are follow, that we're taught to follow, are, you know, it is very much command and control. It is very much fear-based. There's a lot of lack and scarcity mindset built into that. So the question is, how do we then broaden even what the who's that we expose young kids to around, hey, this is leadership right here. So let's not forget the fact that we need to start showing more women leaders as well, not just men. But I guess the notion is, I feel like as a student, young kid, it was, these were the good leaders, these were the bad leaders, right? Because of their actions and their behaviors, but never got into what was at the core of who these individuals were. Like, I think the conversation just needs to go a little deeper into not even characteristics or attributes or anything like that, because that's the stuff that we see. But how do you explain to a middle schooler that, you know, your compassion, your ability to empathize, your ability to listen, right? Some of these things that we don't necessarily see when we're told this is a leader, these are actual leadership characteristics, if you will.
Yeah, I also think we need to take it out of this realm of somebody who's quote unquote famous. I think we need to really look at it in terms of who are our everyday leaders? Who are the folks that we have in our lives, right? Or that we see day to day who are truly leaders, right? These aren't the people, you don't have to do something big or amazing or catastrophic, right? These are people that I admire, you know, the compassion and the empathy of this person who I see every day. Maybe it's your teacher, maybe it's your parents, maybe it's grandparents, whoever it is. I think it's redefining this term leadership to really look at it more from a everyday leader perspective, right? This could be the leader of the PTA. This could be the soccer coach. This is anybody who is tangible, who I'm looking at and who I can talk to, who I can see their characteristics. This isn't somebody who has done all these great innovative things who I'm being told is a leader, but I don't really know what that means in the grand scheme of things. So I think it's also about not only what we're teaching and who we're teaching, but redefining in our schools, what does leadership actually mean, right? How do we make it tangible versus this thing that's out there? And by creating this thing that's out there, when we get into our organizations, we're like, oh, the CEO or oh, the VP, those are titles that are really high up there. They're people like anybody else, and some are good leaders and some are not great leaders. And so if we start to take out the stigma of levels and of great, doing huge, great things to be a leader, I think that's also where we start to redefine what is leadership at a ground level, at a foundational level.
Yeah, totally agree. We have a question here and I definitely want to acknowledge it. So yes. It states that, you know, I'm concerned that organizations are becoming overly dependent on AI to pre-screen candidates. Instead of conducting interviews with qualified candidates, they're incorporating questions that require in-depth answers that take time and thought into the application process. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I think my concern has always been that we've used screening software to begin with. And so what happens in recruiting is that resumes tend to be either accepted or rejected based on certain language that's used based on this pre-screen. So we've already seen some of these issues that have happened when you take the human element out of proper recruiting. I think if there's organizations out there that aren't actually conducting human-based interviews, we do have a little bit of a problem, to be honest. I think that that may stem to the culture of that organization. That probably even stems a little bit from leadership and perhaps the pressure that is being placed on the recruiting team. I do think that there is an element that is taken out when we don't use, when we don't do in-person interviews or we don't do Zoom interviews or even phone screens. And that is how somebody behaves. That is their body language, right? When we're looking at whether Zoom or in person. And I do think that by not having that element and by not having actual interviews take place, I don't think that we're able to properly get a true picture of an individual. And so my opinion would be if you find yourself as part of an organization or interviewing for an organization where it really only is AI to pre-screen, it may not be the best organization for you.
Yeah. Yeah. During the Talent Connect, there was a gentleman who's a CEO of a search firm, and he said him and his team went through this exercise, and this is their part of their strategy to eliminate bias from the screening process. Yeah. And so they had all of these candidates come through. They had like reviewed their resumes and everything. And they didn't know their name. Or I'm sorry, they didn't review their resumes. They had something like it was like a brief of like what their skills were. And then they went through the interview process. And when they decided who they wanted to bring on or move forward with, turned out one person was a plumber. One person was a former corrections officer. And, you know, this was like white collar type jobs or whatever. And the truth is, in traditional environments, if those resumes would have came through, those people might have never been considered for the opportunity. So I do think that organizations need to be mindful. I do appreciate the effort being made to eliminate some bias. But somebody did ask the question. She was just like, well, I want to know what the interview questions were that you got through an entire interview and selected this person and never knew like how it tied back into what it is that they did. And I was just like, that's actually a really great question. That also tells me that they probably put a lot more thought in focusing on skill.
Yep, exactly.
past experience.
Exactly. And I think that's the critical piece, right? So what we're also seeing is people aren't necessarily changing their job descriptions in those areas. What they're doing, they're so focused on that past experience or that degree or whatever it may be, and not looking at the skill set. And that's what that example tells me, that they focused on skill set there and not degrees necessarily and not experience. And so there's another lesson in that as well, which is how are we looking to diversify the candidates that we're actually talking to or screening for different positions?
Yeah. Yeah. I just think about the whole behavioral interview thing and how for the longest time I was like, well, you know, past behavior is a great predictor of future behavior. And so again, that boxed people in. So I'll be curious to see how organizations get creative with identifying talent and creating space for more individuals with varied skills and abilities to be able to step in. So I want to be mindful of time here and shift gears. So, you know, you have an amazing book that speaks a lot to this notion of democratized leadership and what that looks like for self, for individuals to look at who they're being and how they're showing up. So I'd love for you to tell the audience a little bit more about the book.
Absolutely. It's called The Everyday Leader. And my husband and I wrote this book together. He retired from the Marine Corps in 2018. And one of the things we were talking about very early on in the pandemic was leadership and how in our organizations, there can be this disconnect between employees showing up as leaders and our traditional hierarchy system of leaders. And he was telling me that in the Marine Corps, everybody shows up as a leader. And that's because people are taught the Marine Corps leadership traits from day one. And that led us down this pathway of why can't organizations do that? How can we truly democratize leadership so that each of us shows up as a leader? And what we walk through in this book is how to think about your own leadership traits, regardless of what you do in your organization, or if you're a high school student, a college student, any of the above. Just how do I think about who I am as a leader and how do I start defining what those leadership traits are? And that's really the goal of this book, right? Is to truly democratize leadership and make it accessible to everybody for them to start thinking about who do I want to be and how do I want to show up? What's most important to me from a leadership perspective? So again, it's called The Everyday Leader and it's available on Amazon and on our website. There's a little bit more information about it as well.
Awesome. Definitely add that to the list. You know, I always ask the question of, you know, what books have been impactful. So I'm going to go ahead and assume that that's the book. One other thing that I wanted to share is, you know, Hema, I did feature her and several of the other individuals that I had conversations with during the original Leadership Reloaded series. And so if you want to learn a little bit more about Hema's background and, you know, some of the amazing work that she's doing, check out episode 47 of the She Leads Now podcast. You can hear her there. I did also want to share your desired legacy because I included that in the book because I think those are important tidbits for individuals who will be reading this book to see, you know, what is it that you're creating today and how are you working towards that? And so you shared that your desired legacy was to be remembered as someone who lived her passion and followed her dreams. And boy, are you absolutely doing that. So Hema, before we close here, if the audience is looking to connect with you or they want to reach out, learn more either about the book or becoming a gig talent consultant, what's the best way for them to connect?
Absolutely. So LinkedIn, definitely under Hema Crockett. And then our website, which is gogigtalent.com. And that just gives a little bit more information about the organization, the talent collective, and also areas that we can help organizations in, such as leadership, building culture, and things like that.
Awesome. And so I would be a horrible promoter if I didn't actually put up my book, Leadership Reloaded, Reimagining, Redefining, and Rehumanizing Leadership. And, you know, it's this conversation with Hema and several others that inspired me to you know, dig a little deeper and dig into these concepts a little bit more to bring, you know, actual tangible and practical strategies that organizations and individuals could implement, whether they were, you know, sitting at the top of the leadership hierarchy, or they are an individual starting their career trying to navigate the corporate waters or those unwritten rules. So be sure to check out, both of our books are on Amazon, and I will include them in the show notes as well. Before we depart, Hema, are there any last words, anything else that you want to share with the audience?
No, other than thank you. I always love having these conversations and this idea of really bringing leadership to the forefront and redefining what it means. And in that process, redefining who we are and how we show up as well. So always a great reminder, and just love having these conversations with you.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for coming back on. For those of you who are listening, again, everything will be in the show notes. We will be back next week with another episode of the Leadership in Action live series. Until then, have a great rest of the day.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of She Leads Now. If you found today's episode helpful or got a piece of insight that you plan to implement in your business or organization, I would love to hear from you. Connect with me on LinkedIn at Sabine Gideon, that's my handle, and send me a private message, or feel free to go ahead and leave a review on either Apple or Spotify. I also invite you to share this episode with anyone in your network who you think might benefit from this content. Lastly, be sure to check the show notes and the description below for links to resources, including relevant downloads, articles, and any upcoming training. Until we chat again, have a blessed and powerful week.